Hello and welcome to another Silver Linings podcast episode with myself, Callum, and my good friend Buster.
Hello.
I know, it's been a couple of weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks. It feels like a longer time than 2 weeks.
I know, it's just how much we love the show, yeah. I think it shows.
It's a regular part of my routine. It's actually become like a part of lockdown in the same way that people have like Zoom calls and quizzes and baking banana bread and all the shit that became like the norm for a period of time. The only thing that's remained solid through lockdown for me is
your shit.
My diet has resulted in some real number ones on the Bristol Stool Chart. Breeze blocks, I call them. This is a regular thing, and I was about to almost reveal how the sausage is made and what day we record this and when it's released. Just a weekly reminder, this is live.
Live.
When you're listening to this, whatever it is, 2025, remember, stay indoors, keep your mask on.
So how's your last 2 weeks been?
All right. Yeah. I've had some dramatic...
Drama?
Yeah.
Wow.
I guess.
Dramatic drama. Drama of the dramatics.
I actually had a very interesting... Uber ride.
Interesting.
Easy for you to say.
It is.
Had a very interesting Uber ride over to yours this evening.
Yeah.
I was going to cycle, but I accidentally inebriated myself. And we should just get out in the open right now. I accidentally got drunk before the podcast.
It sounds accidental how you fell into that bath of beer.
I am able to throttle it better, and I've only had three drinks before coming over here.
Just not true, but we'll carry on anyway.
Yeah, fair. But I've basically fucked up and got way too drunk before the podcast.
And you also left me hanging for a whole hour.
And a half. Yeah. Almost, really, because normally we do this at... I can't reveal the sausage. So
early doors, we go get drunk. That's what normally happens.
So what accidentally happened was... I said, hey, let's do it this time.
I
turned up an hour late.
You did the post-podcast without me before it.
Yeah.
That's what you did.
Yeah.
Which is a great feeling, really, Buster. I love
so
it.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Yeah. And then
I've got a dog and another little animal called
Lando. Are we allowed to talk about Lando shit pants?
I think we should, yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe you should introduce this. It's your dog and it's your shit pants.
Well, how about you tell everyone what you saw this morning?
So I was the lucky recipient of a WhatsApp video message, which one of those great ones that from the first 2 or 3 seconds, it's difficult to decipher what you're looking at. It appeared to be a dog snuggling up, and then you see a man's hairy ankles. And then what you realize is that's Lando, Callum's dog, climbing into his underpants and trousers, pooled at his ankles while he's having a shit. Lando's just hopped into the little nest that's created by that. And then when in the video, Callum just laughs at the dog going like, why do you do this? The dog just looks up with the cutest face going like, because it's cuddly and it smells like your balls.
And then put his head back down
inside. He goes in for seconds.
For some reason, my dog has the propensity at the moment to, when I'm having a shit and accidentally leave the door open, to walk in, smell my boxers, and just climb in to my trousers and boxers whilst I'm down above my ankles. And it's quite nice to be loved, but I'm a bit scared that because he's only 10 weeks at the moment. What about when it gets to 6 months to a year? Like, how is he going to fit in?
sitting on my knee
while I'm trying to have a poo. This won't work out. But it's very nice to be loved that much that they want to be with you all the time. But I'll post it on Facebook as well, on the Silver Lines podcast, and everyone can enjoy my dog sitting around my ankles whilst I take a poop.
And just also worth saying, it's safe for work. You don't see Callum's dong.
No, you won't be able to anyway. It's not something that can really be revealed very easily.
Oh, not without more subscribers. So remember to follow us on...
Well, that's what gives me a hard-on.
Just follow the Silver Linings podcast on onlyfans.com and you'll see more of Lando climbing into Callum's pants.
Yeah. But apart from that, I didn't go for my hair transplant in the end.
I was going to say I couldn't tell because you still have the same amount of hair, but then to be fair, that should have been the same. You shouldn't have had loads more hair.
No, so basically...
So talk me through what happened.
Basically, I took a picture of the back and sides of my head, which you'd think that you should need this much earlier, and they realised the back of the scar back on the back of my head was a keloid scar. And then they said, do you have any more keloid scars? And basically, keloid is...
What's a keloid scar?
It's the ability to kind of like have your scars bumpy and lumpy.
So like a proper scarified scar. Like, yeah, normally exactly. What you get if you've like picked at a scar for ages.
Yeah.
Your regular scarring is...
Is that
serious?
And so they basically looked at it and they're like, "Oh, you have that all around the back of your head. So no company doing this would, you know, worth their salt anyway, would do this to you. So it's good that I found out beforehand,
yeah,
because otherwise, right, going all the way to Manchester, getting that done, having like bumps and lumps over the back of my head for the rest of my life, that would have been horrible.
So if I remember when we were talking about this and like sort of joshing about this last, 2 weeks ago when we first talked about this, we were looking at some photographs on Google of bad hair transplants. And
yeah,
a lot of them were characterized by like people having scar dots on their head.
And that would be,
I guess, people
me.
With keloid scars that the company's gone ahead and done it anyway because they wanted the hair transplant to be done.
Yeah.
And it took money. Well, I'm really glad that you don't have a bumpy face other than the regular bumps on your face.
Which by that, I mean. So what is your first bit of good news, Buster?
I've got a great bit of good news.
You've got a great bit of good news. Is it the good news that I've got? I think we've only once.
We've only once.
Cross swords?
Touch tips.
Touch tips.
I believe you've called
gingerly.
Gingerly touch tips.
Gingerly touch tips.
Huzzah. Calm down. It's a small amount of pre-ejaculate. At best. Grow
up. Please introduce your good news, Buster.
Well, in the context of silver linings, I would like to first draw across the sky, a dark cloud.
Ooh.
E-waste.
E-waste?
Which is not Yorkshire waste. It is the computer waste. So like when you throw an old computer, a phone, or television,
right,
or anything with a computer chip in it, so that can be like, you know, even washing machines and all sorts of shit that now has computer chips in it.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff, when it gets thrown away, piles up, and it's an environmental disaster for one thing, because it's eminently recyclable or fixable, but is usually thrown away because of our sort of consumerist society and our sort of everything is quickly replaced with a new thing instead of being repaired, which is,
and they're built in obsolescence as well. Is
that's
a big
the word
thing.
I'm reaching for is obsolescence. Yeah, everything's built with something kind of inbuilt to make it
break
at the same time.
It was amazing. If you weren't pissed, you probably would have come up with
maybe
that word.
Maybe.
And you had the dyslexic guy
I'm
tell
forever
you
in your debt for
words.
That. Just running on this. I feel like I can picture you like on a sled, just slaying past going, obsolescence.
Obsolescence.
Yeah, everything's built with obsolescence, which
it's
a chronic problem. And that's the biggest problem with e-waste, is that the world builds things that are designed to be used and thrown away, not to be used and repaired. So e-waste is a huge problem. We've got loads of shit. And to give you an example of the scale of the problem, on average, for every man, woman, and child on the planet, 7 kilograms of e-waste was thrown away last year.
Wow.
Bearing in mind that every man, woman, and child on the planet doesn't have 7 kilograms of technology.
No.
This is clearly stacked massively towards the richer countries. So in Europe, apparently, it was 23 kilograms per person last year.
Wow.
Even more so in the UK. UK was even higher than Europe's average. So like over 20 kilograms of shite, of valuable technology that was just not useful to us anymore, was thrown away last year. It's piling up in landfills. It contains heavy metals that are polluting.
Gold.
And it's kind of full of gold.
Gold.
There's gold in them, there.
There is.
Motorolas.
Yeah.
And all that shit's piling up, and all of it is sent to developing countries to be recycled, in inverted commas, where it also actually...
Glad you said inverted commas.
Yeah, it's very much...
You can't get away with that on a podcast.
I can't do air quotes in a podcast.
Yeah, you can't get away with
inverted quotes. So it's sent to developing countries where the it's a source of more problems because it piles up and then destroys the environment there. It's used to create shitty, horrible jobs where people pick through rubbish and pull bits of circuit boards apart to send these circuit boards somewhere else to be processed for the valuable components of them, where these people get none of that wealth. So e-waste is a massive problem, but the silver lining of the fact that we're dumping loads of shit is that all this valuable material is recyclable, and a company from our favourite country,
New Zealand,
Bungo,
yeah,
called Mint, has...
I've heard of them.
Have you?
Yeah.
So Mint is setting up a new refinery.
Other people might not have heard of them, though.
I'll fill you in. So Mint is a company that recovers e-waste through a new process of... So basically, you can recover these metals, from these valuable metals from e-waste, but it's very difficult. And it usually involves using really harsh chemicals, which are equally bad for the environment, and the whole process is not really a closed loop. This company, Mint, has claimed to have patented a new process which uses microbes,
right,
which, while not completely eco-friendly, not going to sort of defend them on that front, but it uses a lot less water,
yeah,
a lot less chemical, a lot less CO2, no cyanide, which is something that's particularly bad for the environment because it doesn't decompose in the environment very well, and it is,
and also kills
a lot cheaper, which means that it makes it economically viable, which means that it's a step in the right direction. Like,
yeah,
this technology presumably could get a lot better, but it's started, and they've opened a new, or they're planning to open a new processing plant in the UK.
That's great.
Because their big thing is that e-waste should be recycled locally. Because the big problem with it is that
can you imagine taking all the way from the UK,
yeah,
take it down to New Zealand to bring it back to the UK,
yeah, again. It's going to cost loads. It's mad. Sending it all over the world. It gets sent often to, like, the Philippines and China,
which costs loads of money,
masses amount of money for all this, and junk loads to get sent there.
Gas and oil to be sent on ships and stuff. Yeah, it's horrendous.
It's hugely, hugely important to be able to recycle this. I mean, the three R's of, you know, being sustainable are reduce, reuse, recycle, with the last one being the last resort. So we should reduce, first of all. We should buy new shit less.
Mm-hmm.
The new shit we should buy should be repairable, fixable, and, you know, should be able to replace the screens in our phone without buying a new one.
And then you reuse them.
Reuse, we should be able to, like, take the component parts of our old crap and, like, put them on other things or pass them down to kids or whatever. And recycle, they should be able to be melted down, yeah, whatever, and recycle, fixed.
And that's how I treat condoms. I try not to buy them as much as possible. But when I do buy them, I always reuse them. And then if it worse comes to worse, I have to give one to a mate.
Yeah.
So I recycle.
And then worse comes to worse, once you've given them to me, I will smelt them down and I will use them for other condoms.
So, about recycled stuff.
Oh, segue.
I might as well segue into my first story of the week. A company in Sweden called Renewcell have had the ability to kind of come up with some biodegradable organic polymer that all green plants are made out of to create clothing.
Biodegradable organic polymer sounds really, really fancy.
Yeah.
But it's basically like cotton.
Yeah, it's called cellulose.
Which is stuff that plants are made out of.
Exactly.
So why is this different to other things that are made out of cellulose? What's their deal?
So what they have had the ability to do is that they take already worn clothes to its plant in Sweden, where they are debuttoned, shredded, stripped of dye and plastics, and turned into a kind of like a slush.
So they slurry. Can reclothe clothes.
They reclothe clothes, basically. So, like,
the paper pulp clothes.
Exactly, and they give the
paper pulp your pants.
And they give the pulp to, like, companies like H&M in this example, and then they can make products out of that.
That's funny because I was going to mention H&M. They're a Swedish company, right?
They are a Swedish company.
I have seen H&M have, like, little bins for them. They say, like, if you throw clothes in this bin, you get a discount in the store. They've always been very big on that.
Right.
So,
what, could you just take away a sock rather than just hold up a bunch of clothes?
Oh, yeah, you can do anything.
Just
yeah,
one
yeah.
sock. That'd be brilliant.
I would sometimes go in there with nothing but a cummerbund and throw that in there, and I would achieve the distance.
Here's my yeah. jock strap.
Yeah, well, let's not be crass, you know, obviously. Something that large wouldn't fit into the recycling reception.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But that is just one of a very, very many different types of plastic and recycling that they've been able to use for organic and sustainable clothing. So not only have they, not just H&M, but other companies, that's just one company that's doing the kind of like the slush puppy kind of like
yeah, stuff. Like a machine.
Yeah.
I like the idea of that.
Other companies are using like synthetic spider silk. So the kind of there's Whoa, research that's and cool. development with a Japanese biotech startup company called Spiber. Has
obviously
worked
you
out
call
a way...
it something with spider in the name. You yeah, have to do that. If exactly. it's synthetic spider silk, you have to draw that to people's attention because that's fucking cool.
100%. They've worked out a way to make an equivalent material in a lab, and the process begins by genetically modifying the DNA.
Synthetic silk?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
So the process begins by genetically modifying the DNA of microbes to create proteins. But I do also know...
Do you feel that sometimes that we're in a sci-fi movie?
Yeah, 100%. We're almost there, aren't we?
Yeah.
I'm just like, I have a massive fear of death, but I feel like I could potentially live forever. Like, I've got hope in the world. I'm already half mechanical with my pacemaker,
yeah,
aren't I? So, I do know also that they can make spider silk in goats, and they pull it out when they milk them. Very interesting.
No way.
This years ago.
We have to dip back into that at some point.
Yeah,
that's
funky. I'll find that. Well, I'm sure our producer or something could find that for us.
Odin now will be desperately searching.
just frantically Googling, is this right?
But it's just
he has to type in spider silk or spider web goat.
Goat nipples. Odin.
There's also a company called Living Colours, which have the ability to kind of a natural alternative to the kind of toxic clothing dyes and the chemicals, synthetic chemicals that we're using at the moment to dye clothes. They've also had been able to create footwear from corn-based products. And so they use kind of the leftover corn from kind of like farming and stuff like that and create a non-toxic polymer to create that kind of the soles of people's shoes. And then the last one is the climate positive polyester. So San Francisco-based Mango Materials, a team of engineers, entrepreneurs, and scientists are capturing methane and potent greenhouse gases that contributes to the climate crisis and turning it into polymers that offer a sustainable alternative to petroleum-based polyester.
So they're pulling methane out.
Yes.
To make polymers. That's amazing.
Because
methane is, I think it was like 24 times more powerful a greenhouse gas or something like that.
Wow.
Or something like that, than CO2. It's really...
Yeah,
it's
and
really
they're doing the opposite thing. They're extracting stuff.
They're taking
stuff.
It out. They're sequestering it.
Yeah,
they're turning it into something that it's useful.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So they're doubling up. So they're basically not creating a polyester out of petroleum and petrol.
Like we said before, the three R's. They've reduced, reuse, recycle.
Yeah.
They've reduced by recycling, leaving the middle finger. Actually, the audience
can't
see that. And
you reuse shoes anyway.
Well, yeah, everyone reuses shoes. I mean, shoe isn't used until fucked until it's like a flip flop, really.
I'll tell that to my
and
girlfriend.
Actually, you
mate.
Would use a flip flop forever until it's not a flip flop, until it's just a bit of carpet.
Mm. I'm much more one of those people that wears stuff until it's broken and then I go and buy some more.
Same.
Shit.
Yeah, you don't need new stuff. Come on, man, who needs to get it?
But I am also part of the kind of like fast fashion because I don't like spending money on clothes, so I end up buying like t-shirts for like fiver or £3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Oh, Jesus, your knee.
Oh, that's my knee, yeah. They just do that. They're full of nitrogen. I can't tell people what to wear, you know, but I would give you a fast fashion tip. As a man
fast fishing tip? That would be great, because fishing's way too long.
No, my
fishing
fast fashion tips
long.
Are actually just using dynamite. No, my fast fashion tip...
Open up your mouth.
is a company called Rapa Nui, a really good company that make all of their clothes from either recycled cotton, so clothes that have been broken down and shredded and stuff, not using this new technique, but like anything they can get from like shredded bits of old clothing. And they also use, when they have to use raw cotton, new cotton, they use it that's been organically grown or sustainably grown. And the clothes cost a fair bit of money, so a t-shirt will cost you 30 quid, but it's not doing harm.
Yeah.
And they do some really cool stuff. They also do some t-shirts made from recycled plastic bottles as well. So it's not all this. They do the raw organic stuff. They do the recycled organic stuff. They do the plastic bottle stuff. And they're a really good company. It's worth looking into. If you're interested in changing your habits with fashion and not just buying something that you like right now that you will use for a bit and bin.
So many more people now are so environmentally conscious about everything that they're doing, not only with their food, but it's now going into clothing. It is absolute madness when it comes to like how much water just one t-shirt makes, and you're buying it for like 4 or 5 quid.
There's so many aspects of our modern life that take a big toll on the planet. Also, Producer Corner, by the way, has verified that it could, disturbingly, Callum is not bullshitting. But yes, and this is where it gets even better. Professor Randy Lewis shows that Adam Rutherford genetically modified goats at a farm at Utah State University to produce large quantities of spider silk.
Yeah, and they did it.
Which is spider silk is stronger than steel.
It is
tensile strength.
It is, so. And they want to make loads of like bulletproof and stab-proof vests from it. So yeah, there's a lot of.
And then someone had that idea and they called it Spider-Man. So, do you like polio? I'm not talking about the game that posh people play from horseback.
That's polo.
That's polo.
Can you imagine passing around polio on horseback? Oh, polioed.
I mean, it would be less deadly because it's really rare for you to be hit with a wooden bat from horseback. I mean, unless you live in medieval times, in which case I presume that happens all the time.
Quite
annoying.
I have heard about polio.
Polio is a shitter.
It's not nice, is it?
And polio is a disease which infects mostly very young children, children under 5, and quite a lot of those children who are infected become permanently paralyzed. It's a life-changing disease for a lot of people, and also a lethal disease because some of those children who are paralyzed to the extent that they can't breathe and die. It affects mostly these days in our modern world, people from poorer countries, but it still is a massive problem.
You sound like you're doing an Oxfam advert.
Yeah, because I'm trying to build up to the good news.
Okay.
Because the good news, polio is fucking awful, and you probably
the good news is remember
getting
awful.
A polio vaccine at school. Do you remember someone coming in to do vaccines and then making you drink 2 or 3 drops of something salty? That sounds really awful and may have been sexual abuse. But it was delivered from a plastic pipette and not a grown man's penis.
I don't know, but there was a hose.
You would have been given a polio vaccine if you were at school in the UK. It's very routine. I was. They come in, they drop some thing on your tongue, and it's gross, but it's not as bad as the TB vaccine. So yeah. Vaccination globally has been a huge, huge benefit to humanity. If you measure humanity by lives saved, if you measure humanity by minutes spent being alive as a human being, one of the greatest things that humans have done has been to vaccinate people for diseases. Yep. And the good news is that the World Health Organization have declared wild polio extinct in Africa.
Amazing.
After years and years of vaccination, there are now only a few countries that have cases of the vaccine-related polio. So sometimes if you are given the vaccine, it can, because the nature of vaccine is that you give somebody a either deactivated dose of the virus or a small dose of the virus. There are some cases of polio that come from that.
Right.
But the wild polio is the one that's the uncontrollable one, the wild card, really. And it's done in Africa. There are only 2 countries in the world now, Afghanistan and Pakistan are the only 2 countries in the world where there are wild polio vaccine currently. And that's clearly to do with the hard to reach places for vaccines and for the World Health Organization, but...
Who was the celebrity that helped get rid of polio and he done, paid for a lot? Was it... Was it?
I think
the,
it was...
are we talking
Bertie
about...
Bassett.
I'm thinking...
Because he was the... Polo was the enemy of licorice for quite a long time, but Bertie Bassett put all of it aside and...
I feel like it was Bill Gates to eradicate polio, and he was one of the main proprietors for all the stuff that's going on with
Depending on which side of sanity you sit on, Bill Gates has saved millions of lives. They reckon 20-odd million polio cases have been averted in the last few years because of the vaccination campaign that's been going on for the last 10 years.
Or because of him.
Or, if you sit on the other side of sanity, Bill Gates sits at the head of a sinister cabal to control us all, which has yet to deliver any results.
And trying to give everyone some kind of autism. We're going to come back to another favourite of ours, and he's... I know that we don't mention him as one of our favourites, but we do mention him a few times.
Fela Kuti.
That is... What? Fela Kuti?
Oh, for a different podcast. He's a fucking legend.
is the wonderful football player Marcus Rashford.
Lovely now, lad. What a hero. For a young man. What a head on his shoulders. 23 or something?
22.
22. Unbelievable.
We spoke a few weeks ago about him providing school meals for people during the summer. Mm-hmm. He has now set up a task force, which is called Child Food Poverty Task Force. And he has outlined, alongside some of the biggest supermarkets, including Aldi, Asda, Co-op, Deliveroo, Fair Share, Food Foundation, Iceland, Kellogg's, Lidl, Sainsbury's, Tesco's and Waitrose, to be able to come up with a food strategy to stop kids from basically starving all the time. Now, he has three main bits of policy that he's recommended and sent along to MPs are expanding free school meals to every child from a household on universal credit or equivalent, which would reach an additional 1.5 million children aged 7 to 16. Expanding an existing school holiday food and activities program to support all children on free school meals in all areas of England. And instead of the current 50 children that are helped, so they're much, much more than that, and increase the value of Healthy Start vouchers, which help parents with children under the age of 4 and pregnant women buy some basic foods from £3.10 to £4.25 per week, and expanding it to all those in universal credit or equivalent, reach an additional 290 people. Amazing man. He is just proving that football players aren't as twattish as we originally thought. It's amazing because there was... Back in Thatcher days, she privatised the whole of the school meals industry.
The country's wealth.
And it ended up loads of people undercutting each other and ended up giving really bad, dodgy food. Jamie Oliver tried his best.
He did.
Parents pushed beef burgers to the railings. They failed because everyone wanted their turkey dinosaurs.
Yeah, what they called the turkey dinosaurs, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Turkey twisters and stuff.
But hopefully this man, this brave, young, brilliant man has come along. And he's also shown that, you know, people that were on free school meals can, I suppose, achieve something in their life, by air quotes, to which a lot of people haven't previously. So he's done an amazing, amazing job to bring this up and really pushing MPs to, you know, have some humanitarian and feed the children of their nation. Mm. What is a government if they're not going to look after their fucking children? Like, I don't understand it.
Yeah. I mean, what I love about this is not just that he's used his position and his current, spotlight that he has in the media to just raise money for a cause. What he's actually trying to do is to change policy, because that's where things really change.
They do, yeah.
It's changing the law, changing policies, affecting the future. And I can't remember who said this, first of all, but it's a quote that I think is really important, that you can really judge a country or any sort of group of people by how they treat the least of them, you know, the lowest among them. So the poorest people in your country, the people who are the most desperate, the most in need. You can really judge a country by how they treat the most in need. If you're the fifth richest country in the world and you let the children who are in the state school system die of starvation. It's happened recently in the news, tragically, and we won't dwell on this because this is a Silver Linings podcast, but yeah. A lady was found dead next to her malnourished child recently in this country, and they were forgotten. It's one person, so you can't, drag a whole, the whole system through the mud for that. But it's a symptom of a system, and really, we shouldn't consider ourselves as British people a success until we can say nobody sleeps on the street, nobody spends a day hungry. And, nobody is too pissed to know when to stop.
Unfortunately, and this is going to sound extremely left-wing, because it is that...
I've just been corrected by the producer corner. It's Mahatma Gandhi. The measure of any society can be found in how it treats its most vulnerable members.
Yeah, and it's amazing.
That's what I was reaching for.
And I think that what we have, that the problem is that we've sat there and we've listened to people that have sat there and said, you don't get something for nothing. You got to work, you got to do things. Mm. And that a massive problem with that, because people don't have the opportunities that you do. Other people don't have the opportunities to be able to do stuff. And also on top of that, when they do get the opportunities, they are discriminated against. So I can never agree with that. I just think at the end of the day, if you want to selfishly from your point of view, if you want to have someone to cure cancer so you don't die of cancer, if you want to have enough doctors so that you, when you go into A&E, can get treated straight away and well, if you want to have a system where there's plenty of firefighters and nurses and other kind of civil servants that can look after you when you need it for free,
and the Coast Guard, the Fifth Emergency Service.
Yes, you need to bring up people enough and give them food and water and a good education and shelter to be able to get them to be the best of their abilities, which could then become doctors. So selfishly, for you to save your life, you need to help others.
The most selfish thing you can do is invest in society.
Exactly. Thank you very much for joining us this week on the Silver Linings podcast. Thank you very much for Buster turning up, not on time.
Late, very late.
Please follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, all at the handle at the Silver Linings podcast. But apart from that, goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.